Yahoo reports earnings, new pink MacBooks are here, and does VR have a sexual harassment problem? We also get to talk to Scott Wilkinson, who has some amazing new news about technology for your home theater and also for your real theater. All that and a whole lot more on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1495, recorded Tuesday, April 19th, 2016.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Epson's new EcoTank printers. With Epson's line of SuperTank all-in-one printers, you can print thousands of documents without running out of ink. EcoTank is loaded and ready to print when you are. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank to find out more.
And by PillPack, a full-service online pharmacy that combines modern technology, convenient packaging, and personalized service to make your life easier. Visit PillPack.com/twit to save $20 on vitamins and OTCs when you transfer your prescriptions.
Hello and welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we cover technology news right hot off the presses.
It's true.
We do.
We don't lie.
We do. All the technology news that we thought you needed to know today, we will cover it. And we're live from the National Association of Broadcasters Convention. I'm Megan Maroney.
And I'm Jason Howe. Having a good show so far?
So far, it's really fun.
Day two.
Got to see lots of new stuff, new cameras, lighting. Still a bit overwhelmed, but got to see lots of people that we've worked with in the past, old Twit, old Tech TV friends.
Yeah.
So that's been great, too.
That has been fantastic. We've had a lot of awesome people just kind of stop by the stage.
Mm-hmm.
I heard that there is a huge VR kind of area in, I think, South Hall or North Hall. Anyways, I'll figure it out because I got to go there. Because if there's like a sea of VR and I'm missing out on it, then I feel like I'm failing myself by doing that.
So yeah, you got to swim
tomorrow.
In the sea of VR.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's great to have fans come, people who watch the network. Chris is here. He works for the federal government. And he, when I said I was in D.C. last week, he said, I know. And I still haven't figured out if he knows because he works for the government or he knows because he's a fan of the network. And he's
both.
Being sly about this.
Yes. I don't think you're going to know any more than that either.
No.
So we'll just leave it at that. Good to have you here. All right, so we got a lot of news today.
Today was
another one of those, just a week of news, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Yahoo earnings, of course, were announced today. Its first earnings release since it told the world that it would be pursuing an aggressive strategic plan to basically sell the company, more or less. Yahoo noted that it had made substantial progress. These are Marissa Mayer's words. Substantial progress towards potential strategic alternatives, which is kind of the sale of the company. Of course, yesterday was the bidding deadline for potential bidders. Kara Swisher at Recode, because she knows all, could confirm that Verizon made its offer. And, you know, of course, it's looking to do the whole ad tech thing along with some expanded media efforts in combination with its AOL assets. Also, private equity firm TPG is interested, also because of kind of the ad tech side of things. And then finally, Bain Capital and Vista Equity Partners, which has a number of ex-Yahoo executives on its board. So that's an interesting kind of, kind of twist. More undoubtedly submitted as well. But we just kind of haven't heard about them officially. But Kara has sources. She has good sources.
And so does it sound like it's being sold off in pieces?
Potentially.
Yeah.
I think my guess is that if a company like Verizon comes along, they're going to take the whole kit and caboodle.
But private equity firms would want pieces.
Right. Or they'd snap it up and sell it off into pieces.
You
don't need and everything. No matter how you slice it, it's just kind of sad because so many groups have really just kind of passed on it because it's just too much of a crazy ship to turn around, essentially. Too challenging.
Yeah. Revenues and earnings are sinking. They spent $110 million just in restructuring in the last year. I think that came from Kara Swisher, too. $9 million in advisory fees to banks. So they're spending a lot of money to turn the ship around. But, Meyer was... said this is all our Q1 results were in line with expectations. So, using all of the buzzwords to say, we're fine.
Yeah, she also said our board, our management team, and I are completely aligned with this top priority for shareholders in regards to the sale. So it's on like Donkey Kong.
Right. Okay, well, let's talk about something I'm much more excited about. A collection of 12-inch Retina MacBooks are here. One of them is pink. Mm-hmm. Rose gold.
This is what Apple does now.
Yeah,
they're
they
all
do.
About the pink.
Then we can have all our matching phones and our iPads and, you know, our MacBooks all match pink. When I say ours, I don't mean yours. You're not going to get a pink nor a space gray or any colored MacBook. I understand that. Maybe you will.
Maybe.
But, yeah, The Verge says that they had a first look. They said it feels about 25% faster, has the new Skylake processors, an extra hour of battery life, which is good. I'm on 18% right now on this one. I don't know if I'm going to make it through the show.
Uh-oh.
I know. It has the same chassis. You're going to be paying $1,300. That's for the base model. Goes up from there. And The Verge also says to budget a couple hundred dollars for those USB-C cables. Thank you, John. John gave me power. So I don't need a new pink MacBook.
That's all that needed to be said.
I don't need a new pink MacBook. All I needed was to charge
you
this one.
You just need power.
Yeah. So USB-C cables, you'll need them. And you want to get the good ones, right? We talked about that last week. You don't want to get any cruddy USB-C cable that you found on the ground.
I know. Like, and yes. And of course, they did stick with the single USB-C port as opposed to doing what the new Chromebook Pixel, for example, does, where it has a USB-C port on both sides. That's, you know, nicer because you can choose which side you charge on, or you can have one for charging, one for throughput of data, or I/O, that sort of stuff. So they don't have that moderate bump. I know that we're probably getting one in our household. My wife has been itching to upgrade her ancient MacBook Air, and I was like, you know what, just hold off for a couple of months. I think they're going to come out with a revision of the MacBook, and sure enough, here it is. It's not like a revolutionary upgrade, but they also tagged on like 8 gigs of RAM as the new standard for their laptops now. So that's a nice, I feel like more RAM, always better, always going to make for a better experience on your laptop.
Now, this might be too much of a personal question, but will Stacey get pink?
I don't know. Mm. Certainly I'm sure she'll consider it, but I'm guessing she's not going to.
Okay.
I don't see her as gravitating towards the pink, but I won't judge if she
does. What if you called it rose gold?
I don't know. I think she'd still probably want to see it in person because she has a tacky, a monitor for tackiness, and I think she would want to be able to clear it before going there. I will also say that this was not the only announcement that they had. They also revised the 13-inch MacBook Air, which is kind of the lower cost, more entry-level laptop, super successful line. That also has 8 gigs of RAM, but they didn't upgrade the part that I think the MacBook Air really needs. Since 2010, the display has been 1440 by 900, which by then standards was pretty nice. By now standards is really just kind of soft, kind of blurry, and needs an upgrade. Having said that, they need the lower price to kind of differentiate that from the MacBook line. And and this kind of comes in, the 13-inch MacBook Air is at $999, so it's still lower than the MacBook line, so it gives you that price point. You can understand why they didn't just make it super powered, because then they wouldn't be able to meet that price point and differentiate it from their other line.
Right. Yeah, the display is interesting, and we're going to talk to Scott Wilkinson a little bit later, but I mean, being here is you're just reminded that there are some people that really care about display.
Oh, yeah.
And some people who do not.
Who don't care at all. Yeah, it ends up being, my take on that is it's always like you don't know what you're missing if you've never had it before, but then once your eyes kind of get adjusted to that,
that's true.
It's really hard to go backwards. Mm-hmm. And some people just don't care as much. And I suppose, hey, if saving a little money matters more to you than having that kind of like high-res display, then hey, more power to you. That's right. Why we have options.
Mm-hmm. And you can order the MacBooks today. They'll be in stores today, I think, and then in other stores that aren't Apple stores after today.
Excellent. Now, we've talked a lot about a company that we know so little about, Magic Leap. That's the virtual reality. No, not virtual reality. Mixed reality startup that Google is heavily invested in. Got an insane round of funding not too long ago based on, not very much public information whatsoever. So the technology must be good, obviously. We've kind of been anticipating that. Wired has a terrific in-depth report on the company. Included in it, and I think it's about halfway down the article, Brian, is an is new footage of just content shot using Magic Leap, no editing required or whatever. The person that wrote the Wired story actually had a chance to throw the Magic Leap hardware on and get a controlled kind of experience. And they said they were blown away. Like, I'm getting really pumped for this.
Yeah.
They say that it's the way the technology works is you don't see the pixelation that we see right now. It's a different type of delivery of video to the lenses, different type of lens. And actually Magic Leap hated hearing the word lens when they were talking about it. They were like, no, it's not a lens. You know, it's completely different. But there's no pixels, no digital artifacting, and they basically said repeatedly in the article that it's good enough that it tricks your brain into thinking it's actually real.
Yeah, I mean, that's the goal. Kevin Kelly wrote the article, and it's really fascinating because he says, I mean, he first of all has been, he said the first VR headset that he wore was like 1989 or something. He's been in this in the last 5 months alone. He's tried every VR headset. He's tried every prototype. He's tried, he knows the camera technology. I mean, you know, he's, Kevin Kelly Wired is, he knows his stuff.
Yes.
So it's not, because I feel like there are so many people reporting on VR and augmented reality, which Magic Leap chooses to call mixed reality. And that's just a PR term because augmented sounds weird and technical, but they, yeah, he's tried it all, and he really says this is great. So it's not just like, you know, someone off the street is like, oh, like, let me put this on, and it's amazing. Well, of course it's going to be amazing, but he really is saying it is different than what's there now. So, and, you know, Rory Abovitz, the CEO of Magic Leap, he's a card. I think he's really interesting. I mean, he said some crazy things. He said in the past that HoloLens causes brain damage.
Okay.
He had no scientific study to back that up.
But he could be right.
He could. We don't know. And he's just in Florida, and he's like, if you want to invest in my company, you come to me. And then, you know, he's like slowly dripping this out. Wired, come show everyone in one big blast that all of us talk about how great it is.
But I'm getting really, really curious. I have a feeling it's still going to be a couple of years before anyone gets their hands on it necessarily. Mm-hmm. They're going to be dripping it out, you know, a little bit slowly here and there the way they are. It's obvious that they want to be really controlled about it. But I think that comes from some sort of confidence in what they have. Like, it really sounds like they have something very compelling. I really want to see it. Peter Jackson, of course, director, famous director, has been toying around with the Magic Leap prototype for a while, and he claims that mixed reality will be as utilized as smartphones are right now in 10 years, based on what he's seen. Mm-hmm. So I don't know about that, but it makes me even more compelling. You know, I'm more compelled to want to see this if somebody that I respect, like Peter Jackson, is so all in on it.
Right. You know? Or Google. You also respect Google. They've invested in it also.
Yes.
It is interesting because, I mean, we heard about, like, MIT. They sent someone from MIT there a year ago, and she said, oh, this is amazing. But then you don't hear anything, and you're just like,
I know.
But I mean, we're just used to a certain way that startups present themselves to us. And he's chosen a different way, and that, you know, it could be amazing, and it could not be. Although I do believe Kevin Kelly from Wired.
He's super confident.
Yeah.
And that makes me even more intrigued.
Mm-hmm. So another messaging client has joined the ranks of those who have end-to-end encryption. Viber announced today that over the next couple months, if you update to the latest version of Viber, you will have privacy in your chats, in your phone calls, in your messages that you send through Viber. I'm not a Viber user, but I do know some people that use it. Like, it seems to be a good cross-platform for people who are in iOS, Android families.
Sure.
Are you a Viber fan?
No. I mean, there's just so many different messaging platforms. This, in my experience, is another messaging platform. So I'm not too familiar with it personally in my own usage. But I do think it's interesting that encrypted messaging used to be a differentiator. That used to be a thing that a company like Telegram could say, this is why we exist. We exist because our messages are secure. And now it's standard.
Right.
You know, in a very short amount of time, it's become standard across all platforms. I think then it just becomes a matter of, okay, if they're all doing it, then maybe, you know, things are going to pare down a little bit, and we're going to see some of these kind of, I don't know, you know, a changing of the guard of sorts.
Well, it doesn't feel standard. It still feels like maybe this is a marketing point that, you know, Viber, you haven't heard of Viber, like that, you know.
I mean, no, I'd heard of Viber.
Well,
you don't use it.
You don't use Viber.
Yeah.
So, you know, just saying like, oh, hey, you know, this differentiates us for now. But you're right, like WhatsApp has it. And so, yeah, it is becoming more of the norm, and that's good.
For sure. I wouldn't argue that at all. Android often catches flack for security or lack thereof, depending on your perspective on the platform. Google today released its second annual security report to showcase what it is doing to tackle those issues. Machine learning, obviously heavily used by Google to detect harmful behavior within apps. That's resulted in more than 6 billion checked apps over the course of the past 12 months. Also, 400 million devices scanned every single day for threats. Google's also amped up protection measures inside the Play Store. A lot of those. I mean, this happens all the time, like using the platform, even to the point to where, yes, everything that's checked, you know, within the Google Play Store, which they say this is the best way to kind of keep secure on Android, is to get it from legitimate places like the Play Store. They've done a lot of things within the Play Store to have, you know, advanced kind of look-ins into these apps and understand, you know, that they are bad actors before the fact. So you rarely ever kind of see those hit the devices. But even outside of it, that's the big risk, right? People going to strange places to find these APKs to install on their Android device. And Google even has protection or the ability to scan those APKs when you start to install them on the Android platform. So I think it's good. You know, I feel like Google's done a lot to address this. The elephant in the room is that there's always going to be one major thing that they're not going to be able to have so much control over, and that's updates for the OS depending on the OEM or the carrier. Like,
right.
It's really out of their hands, and that's one of the biggest ways to prevent kind of insecurity on the platform.
Yeah, I definitely applaud their transparency for sure. I also think that we have some responsibility in this too. I mean, a lot of what you're saying is like things you could prevent on your own. Like, don't go to weird places. Don't install things you don't trust. Also, and if you want to know the information that Google has on you, all you have to do is go to history.google.com and you can see your searches. You can see like what you've said to Google Now, and you know, just go to that page and see. Like, and they give you some control over what they save and what they don't save. And so I think that we need to take more of a hand in our own privacy and security too.
There are a lot of articles all the time about this insecurity, you know, and it's Android again, blah blah blah. But the reality is the numbers, you know, like that no one's going to see that, and you know, you never hear the other side of that story, which is that all of these people were afflicted by this, and it resulted in all of them like losing hundreds of millions of dollars and blah blah blah. You hear about the potential of the security, you don't hear about the other side so often, which is that actually it's battled down to like 0.2% of spyware, you know, on installs at this very point. Now, when you're talking about millions and hundreds of millions, let's say, maybe that adds up, but in the course of the entire user base, it's really nothing and you're probably not going to see it. So it's not as bad as it seems.
Right.
Let's just say that.
Mm-hmm. Well, Electric has an exclusive story about a new hire at Apple who used to work at Tesla and also used to work for Aston Martin. Chris Porritt, he was chief engineer at Aston Martin, and he was also at Tesla, as I said, he was a former vice president of vehicle engineering at Tesla. So, you know, it's just one of those little hints that Apple might be working on an electric car. And, of course, we will not know. It's a big hint. Or maybe who knows, Chris Porritt might just say, like, I want to make pink iPhones.
Yes. I want to work on UI. I want to do something new. I mean, this guy had his hands in some pretty significant stuff, you know, both at Tesla and Aston Martin. He was actually responsible for some of the most sought-after Aston Martin cars, like specifically responsible for one, the 177, the V12, Zagato, and then the DB9. Very iconic cars that he was, you know, very, very much a big part of the creation. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, his background makes it pretty obvious that Apple has designs, quite literally, in this regard. And it just makes me think, like, the Apple car, it's actually happening.
Yeah.
Well, it's actually going to be a thing, is it?
Wall Street Journal, like, they had that big story last year about, you know, that it was going to be 2019, Project Titan. So, yeah. And Johnny Ive, big fan of Aston Martin's,
yes.
Has a couple, crashed a couple. You know, gives away a couple. So, yeah, I am excited for the electric car.
He is flush in Aston Martin.
Yeah, he is. And one final headline to report, a sad one. Today, Intel announced they were laying off 12,000 employees, probably in the next 60 days. That is 11% of their workforce. I mean, definitely a result of the slump in PC sales, as the New York Times says. But, you know, they were positive. They said the PC market is down, but the security market is up. They want to focus more on growth businesses. So yeah, they also reported $13.8 billion in a quarterly revenue and $1.2 billion in a restructuring change.
Hardware's not easy. It's just not easy. Even for gigantic, you know, behemoths like Intel, hardware is not easy. That's what they say. It's their biggest job cut ever. I don't know. You know, mobile's also a really big deal right now, and that's just kind of the place that the majority of that kind of action is happening, and I think even that's maturing. So who knows what the VR is next? You know, who knows what's next?
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, after the break, Scott Wilkinson is here. He's been roaming the show floor, finding all the home theater geekiest things for you. But first, we want to thank a sponsor of our show. I want to talk about Epson, the new EcoTank printer. Epson's revolutionary EcoTank line of printers for home and office introduce a new age in printing. The new EcoTank ET4550 wireless all-in-one printer does not use ink cartridges. Instead, it features an innovative, refillable ink tank. It comes with enough ink to print up to 11,000 black pages or 8,500 color pages. That's equivalent to about 50 ink cartridge sets. You're loaded and ready to print for up to 2 years. Powered by Epson's leading-edge precision core technology, it delivers high-speed, vivid colors, laser-quality black text, plus auto two-sided printing, a 30-page auto document feeder, and easy wireless printing from tablets or from your pink iPhone. It's no wonder the ET4550 printer was named a CES 2016 Innovation Awards honoree. All EcoTank printers deliver an unbeatable combination of convenience with ultra-low-cost replacement ink bottles. Now you have the freedom to print without running out of ink. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank today to transform the way your home, office, or work group prints. For the best combination of ease and value, turn to the new Epson EcoTank printers. That's EPSON.com/EcoTank. And we thank Epson for their support. Epson, exceed your vision.
Excellent. Thank you, Epson. All right, joining us here at the table in the Twit set at NAB is Scott Wilkinson.
Hey, guys.
Home theater geek. How's it going?
My dogs are barking.
Dogs are barking.
Yeah, man.
I've seen a lot of cool stuff.
Oh, I've seen a ton of cool stuff.
Excellent.
Man, lots of great stuff here. It's one of my favorite shows, really. I mean, CES is great. It's all consumer products. Here it's all pro products. But really, I come here to look at what the pros are doing and how that's going to affect what we as consumers see and hear when the content finally gets to us.
So what do you think when you hear that, like, who I was just talking about him in Magic Leap. Yes, it was
Magic Leap?
No, so Magic Leap is the mixed reality. Peter Jackson. Peter Jackson is invested in this kind of crazy VR world that is something like Magic Leap or whatever.
Right.
Like, what do you think that says about the kind of the future of home theater?
Well, I think that what we've seen here at the show, certainly, and that's one example, VR and AR, as they're called, seem to be so ubiquitous. They're everywhere,
yeah.
Right? I myself am still having a little trouble imagining what a VR movie would be, right? Because a movie is a story, right? The movie maker's telling a story, and they want you to look a certain place and tell their story. But if you're in VR, you could be looking around there, over there, not paying attention to the story at all. How is that going to work? I don't really know.
What if it's a new genre of storytelling?
Well, that's the thing. I was over at Technicolor the other day, and they're big on VR and AR, and they had an example of an AR system, okay, augmented reality, or what I guess you guys call mixed reality.
Is what they
well, that,
yeah.
that was termed today. That was the time I heard it.
But. So you're wearing a pair of sort of glasses, right, that you can see the TV or the movie screen in front of you, but then other stuff can be overlaid. Mm-hmm. So something might be happening on the table, a physical table, with then some virtual stuff going on. And I realized, okay, that opens up some possibilities that weren't there before. So it really is a wide open field. And what people do with it now is going to be the key. How do you tell a story while in a way that takes advantage of this but still doesn't let you kind of wander?
Right.
Or maybe part of the story is you wander.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's some part of the story that's behind you, you know? I mean, there are many possibilities. I can't really see them all yet, but
You know, like in traditional movie making, you know, processes, like you're telling a story, and sometimes it's important, very important, that the viewer sees that particular moment in order for that story to either resonate or make sense or whatever the case may be.
You might miss
That's
an
a pretty
important
significant
point.
Challenge.
It is.
It really
is.
VR.
I don't see it. I don't see how it can be done myself yet. I got maybe a bit of a glimpse of it here at the show about how what thing people might be thinking about doing. Mm-hmm. We'll see.
Mm-hmm. Who knows? If movies are completely generated by computers, let's say, maybe the next thing that you're supposed to see doesn't happen until you actually turn to
able
to see it, and then it kicks that off.
Okay, if they have a head tracking thing. It triggers an event.
And it goes, okay,
when you
you're
move
there
over
now,
there,
we can show you the next part of the
exactly,
story.
Exactly, exactly. Man, the possibilities are endless, really.
Yeah, really exciting. But so what else have you seen?
Well, I have to tell you, the most impressive thing I saw here was before the show actually started. The show was started on Monday. Before, over the weekend, there was a conference called the Future of Cinema Conference. And there were a lot of panels on the future of cinema. There was some stuff on VR and AR. But what really took everybody by storm was Ang Lee, this director who did Life of Pi, he did Hugo. No, I'm not sure he did Hugo, but he did one of the Hulks. Mm-hmm. You know, actually, one of my favorite movies.
Yeah.
He did Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Yes, exactly.
Way back in the day. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, his next movie coming up is called Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk.
That's a great book, by the way. I read the novel. It's amazing.
It's called The Catch-22 of the Iraq War.
Yeah.
And it makes a lot of sense. And so he decided to make a film out of the novel. But what he decided to do was really remarkable. He, you know, for the last 100 years, movies have been shot at a frame rate of 24 frames per second.
Right.
And that's really based upon the limitations of the technology 100 years ago. And yet we still do it today.
Yeah.
Because
It has the cinematic effect. Now everybody thinks that's the cinematic effect. Yeah. And anything else, any higher frame rate, which is now easy with digital technology, doesn't look filmic, doesn't look cinematic. It looks like video. It looks like it was shot, you know. So some people call it the soap opera effect.
Yep.
Well, Ang Lee decided to buck that trend. He shot this movie at 120 frames per second.
Wow.
Five times as fast as a normal movie. He also shot it with a resolution of 4K, right? 4096 by 2160. And in 3D. But he shot it in 3D, like Life of Pi. Mm-hmm. Right? He actually put two cameras on a rig.
That's the way you got to do it. If you're going to do 3D, do it right.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. And so they showed a rough cut of about 11 minutes of this movie. It's not done yet by any means. It's coming out on Veterans Day, as it happens, in September. But they showed to those of us who were at the Future of Cinema Conference, I showed a 10-minute clip. At 120 frames per second, 4K, 3D, using Dolby 3D, this particular type of 3D, very bright also, five times brighter than the 3D you would normally go and see in a movie. And I have to tell you, it was astonishing.
I can see where the technology could really enhance the story, because having read the novel, it's just sort of a crazy version of what happens to this veteran when he comes home and the way our society treats people and fame and war.
Yes.
And I could see how that technology could really enhance that, as opposed to like VR, which feels more like, oh, let's do a choose your own adventure kind of thing, which I've never liked.
Right.
But yeah, and I am really looking forward to that.
Oh, it's remarkable how clear everything is.
Yeah.
You know, things are moving around, cameras are panning, and everything is crystal clear the whole time. The 3D was the most comfortable 3D I've ever experienced. Now, I'm a fan of 3D. I know Leo isn't particularly, but this particular type of 3D called Dolby 3D has some problems for me because I wear glasses.
Mm.
No problem in this movie. It had an emotional impact, and Ang Lee talked about this in his keynote, that he thinks that this higher frame rate and the greater spatial resolution, greater temporal resolution because of the high frame rate, has a greater emotional impact on the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a very emotionally impactful movie to begin with, or theme or story to tell. And he is adding to that, to the point where even the people who came out and said, oh, it looks like video, you know, they didn't, after a few moments, they didn't care.
Yeah.
They were drawn into the story so deeply. Even this little rough cut clip of 11 minutes or so, it was amazing.
It really seems, and we're going to be talking about this actually later at the end of the show with VR, and then with this where you're talking about 3D, so that makes it a little bit more immersive, but high resolution, super bright, almost like you're looking through a window. You know, everybody's kind of, that's always the dream that you're chasing.
You know,
it seems like the more you can improve the quality of that air quotes reality, the easier it is to kind of get lost in that emotion, right?
That's
Not only is it emotional because the story says certain things that resonate,
right.
But now it looks like that emotional event is actually happening right in front of you.
Yes.
And, you know, just as human beings, that makes it easier to connect to.
I remember when HD, right, first came on the scene, and everybody said, oh, it's like looking out a window.
Right.
Well,
yes,
this really is like looking out. Uh-huh. I mean, I literally thought I was looking at a live shot, a live scene, something that was happening literally in front of me. It was amazing.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
So speaking of HD, let's talk about HDR.
HDR, one of my favorite subjects. It's all over this show.
Yeah.
Really, seriously. And so what that means, high dynamic range. It means lower blacks, deeper blacks, brighter whites, brighter colors. And that is another, I think, enhancement to the emotional impact of the experience. Now, Dolby Cinema is the only place where you can see that in a commercial setting. There are HDR TVs now, and there are booths all over this show. Mm-hmm. Sony has got some great shots that they took of high dynamic range, and they're showing it on their commercial TVs. ATSC, the Advanced Television Systems Committee, they are putting together a new broadcast standard that is being demonstrated for the first time here at the show, and they are basically capturing images with a camera at one end of the South Hall in high dynamic range and actually transmitting that over the air from a broadcast tower on Black Mountain some 15 miles away, being picked up by an antenna here at the show and being shown on consumer high dynamic range capable TVs. And the effect is beautiful.
Wow. It's
wonderful.
So HDR and 4K, is one better than the other or just different?
Oh, that's a great question. In my opinion, those are two orthogonal variables, okay?
That's the word I need to have defined.
Well, what orthogonal means at right angles.
And okay.
Basically, it means they're independent.
Okay.
Right? You can have 4K without HDR. You can have HDR without 4K. In my opinion, HDR is far more important. It makes far more difference to the picture quality. You can walk into a room with an HDR signal or an HDR picture on a TV from across the room and see it instantly. You know, wow. It draws your eye. But the difference between 2K and 4K, or 1080p and 2160p, you have to be up pretty close to the screen to even see a difference.
Mm-hmm.
So HDR, far more important. And the ATSC demo that they're showing here, the resolution is 1080, 1080i even. It's
wow.
Not 4K.
Mm-hmm.
But it's HDR, and you see it. You can see it from across the hall.
Man, that really much of a difference.
Oh, big difference.
Wow.
Big difference. I recommend, if at all possible, if you live near one of the currently 15 Dolby Cinema locations in the country, four in Europe, go see a movie there, because the presentation is so much better. I saw, the last one I saw was Batman v Superman. Not a great movie, in my opinion, but one of the best HDR presentations I've ever seen. It was just stunning. What's up there now, I think, in those theaters is The Jungle Book.
Oh,
and I've heard great things about that.
Opened on Friday. I couldn't go because I was coming here. So as soon as I get back home, I'm going. Because that's going to be awesome.
Well, it's interesting that you talk about, I mean, sometimes the technology is so great, then, like, the storytelling, they feel like the storytelling doesn't have to be as good, or, you know, like,
well,
that with a Batman, Superman.
Yeah,
that
exactly
it is?
Right. Exactly
I just have ignored right. it because everyone says it's horrible. But then yeah. you're like, well, it's so amazing. The technology is amazing. You forget
you know, I
it's
went,
a bad movie.
Yeah, I went because I wanted to study the technology, not that I was necessarily that interested in Batman v Superman. The DC world is so dark. I prefer the Marvel world, which is kind of more lighthearted. But in any event, it was a gorgeous presentation, as was The Revenant. And here's another example of how high dynamic range makes the image look more real. It's closer to what you can see in the real world. And it looked so real, in fact, that I had to leave. I couldn't stay till the end because it was so brutal.
Because it's a dark film.
It's
and dark from a content perspective.
Yeah. From a content perspective, yes. The imagery was gorgeous, just beautiful. And it was shot, as far as I know, in all natural light. So there wasn't any like lighting or anything.
Wow.
And it just looked so real, in fact, that my stomach was turning and the bear attack was like, oh, my God. And I just had to leave.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose if you're doing high dynamic range that more realistically, you know, represents the actual lighting that our human eye sees mm-hmm. in a particular place, you mm-hmm. don't need all that extra lighting. That extra lighting is there to compensate for the weaknesses of the camera that you're using or whatever.
Yeah.
Or to paint a, you know, more stylized picture in some case.
Now, getting one more thing to say about Ang Lee's Billy Lynn's long halftime walk, he said he had to relearn movie making. With this new technology, he actually did shoot it in high dynamic range. We didn't see it presented that way in this demo. But at 120 frames per second, they don't even use makeup on the actors.
Wow.
Because you can see the makeup.
Yeah.
It's so clear. He said the actors had to learn how to act differently. It has to get closer to real life because you can see their acting.
I know.
Yeah. Really amazing.
Yeah, I know. I always think about that because when I was on Tech TV, you know, I was 10 years younger, but the technology was different, so I looked different.
Right. And you could wear makeup and no one would know.
Right, exactly. Yeah, now, yeah.
In this movie, they had to take a 3-week regimen of diet and so on just to make sure their skin was clear when they shot it.
Interesting.
Well, fascinating stuff.
Yeah.
We actually have a voicemail today. I was wondering if you could stick around.
Sure.
Because I think you might be interested.
Okay.
260 TNT show. Patrick called in. Sorry, Megan. You were supposed to read this, and I apologize. About our discussion last week on millennials and the movie theater experience.
Hey, TNT show. This is Patrick from Texas, and I wanted to chime in on the whole texting, cell phone usage, and things. If you think about it, most millennials are not making as much money as their parents do. And movie theaters are ridiculously expensive. Like, it's such a prohibitively expensive thing. I think that they're missing the point, and if they want to get millennials in there, all they have to do is just bring back the $2 a night things. Now, on something like a Kevin Hart show, I think they should be a little bit more lenient. Is it disrespectful? Yes, but on the other hand, not everyone who's there wanted to be there. Some people were dragged along there, and they have to sit through, you know, imagine if you had to sit through a comedy show that you didn't like for 2 or 3 hours.
Oh.
You know, everyone's got their own comedic taste. Might not be into it. But kicking them out is just as wrong as interrupting other people. So we really got to learn to respect each other.
Oh,
peace out.
Man.
Peace out.
So I'm sure you've heard this debate of...
And AMC, you know, said that they were going to allow texting, and then they got such blowback that they decided to walk that back and say, well, okay, never mind. I applaud them for saying never mind.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, okay, if you got dragged along, too bad. You know, you could... My wife and I sometimes go to the theater, and it's often too loud for her. And so she'll say, okay, enjoy the movie. I'm going to go stroll around for a while, right? So if you don't like what you're doing, leave.
Yeah.
Why interrupt it for everybody else?
Good point.
I got to tell you, in high dynamic range, it's even worse. I was watching some high dynamic range film, and the woman next to me was texting or something, and the bright screen was so bright, I immediately was totally distracted out of the movie. This is wrong.
Yeah.
But what about his argument? Like, bring back the $2 nights. I remember $2 Tuesday at the movie theater.
Sure. I'm all for that. That's fine.
Yeah. I mean, do you think that the price is really keeping people out of the theater? Or do you think it's our home theaters that are keeping people out?
Well, there you got a couple of good points there. The prices are high. And especially if you go to a Dolby Cinema or something, you're going to pay a $5 premium or so, roughly, over another ticket, you know? And home theaters are getting better, and my website, AVS Forum, there are a lot of people who have wonderful home theaters that are probably better than many of the theaters that they could go out to, and plus there isn't a kid kicking the back of their seat or somebody texting or whatever. So in some cases, that's true, but there's also another element to it that I think is really important, and Ang Lee brought this up in his keynote as well. He considers movie theaters almost as temples, almost as spiritual places where a shared experience can occur in a group of people.
Yeah.
And I really resonated with that. I thought that was right. I like going out to the movies. I like having a communal experience, even with people I don't know, because we're all in it together, in a sense, you know? And I really thought that what he said about that was really good. I was talking just before the show with somebody who, Richard Cray was his name, who said he thought he had grown up in the theater and he had been on Broadway and stuff. And he said, I think there should be a class taught in schools on theater etiquette. You know, I said, yeah, that's probably not a bad idea. Mm-hmm. I mean, millennials, okay, they don't have as much money. I would certainly think that would be great to have, you know, $2 Tuesday or $4 Tuesday or whatever it would be. But don't be disrespectful. You know, people are there to have an experience. And if they're distracted from that experience, then it ruins it in some way. And so I applaud AMC for retracting that offer. I wish millennials would either be respectful of that, or if they really can't stay off their phone, walk out, step out.
Or really anyone.
Right, we should say millennials don't corner the market.
I don't mean that. I don't mean that.
But people who are addicted to their phones.
Yeah.
It's hard to avoid it because that's how the AMC, I can't remember his name, but that's how he framed it.
Yes, so that was kind of, so I framed it the same way. Okay.
I mean, you know, he kind of started there. One idea I have, maybe they could do this starting today, is if you plan on texting in a movie theater, sit in the very back row, the absolute back row. No one's sitting behind you. That's, no harm, no foul.
Okay, all right. Now, I will say
have to, and you still might get kicked out.
Well, you might still get kicked out. And I will say this, in high dynamic range presentations, the darkness of the theater is ever more critical. In fact, we're now talking about how can we eliminate exit signs.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So that they pop up in an emergency, but otherwise they're down because they're now just quite distracting. Yeah. So maybe even somebody in the back row texting on their phone, that light would impinge upon the experience. Mm-hmm. It's worth a try.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Well, Scott, thank you so much for trolling the floor, for all your work you do, and for Home Theater Geeks, which is a great show.
Thank you.
What's the best place if people want to follow your work? What's the best place for them to go?
Well, the best place is avsforum.com. There on the homepage, me and my colleague Mark Henninger post things all the time. He just came back from an audio show, and he's posting a bunch of stuff there. I'll be posting a bunch of stuff from here. Home Theater Geeks, of course, twit.tv/HTG, where we have weekly Geek Fest. Mm-hmm. And you can email me at scott@twit.tv if you have any questions. I love answering questions. I answer those online at the website as well. And also tune in to The Tech Guy, Saturday mornings, 11:30, just after the 11:30 news. On Saturdays, Pacific time, I'm there with Leo Laporte talking about home theater.
Awesome. Well, thank you for answering my questions, too.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
You bet. Yeah. Thanks, man.
Take care.
Thanks.
All right. Coming up, does virtual reality have a sexual harassment problem? Yes, things are about to get a little heavy in here. But first, let's take a minute to thank the sponsor of today's episode, PillPack. So first things first. We simply don't have as much time as we used to. I feel like my life keeps getting more and more complicated. I don't have as much time to run to the pharmacy to, you know, pick up my prescriptions, for example. Anything that we can do to cut down on all of those extraneous things, it's going to help us live better lives. Taking that trip to the pharmacy, pick up prescriptions, made sense before the internet. But now, frankly, it's an unnecessary use of our time that's very valuable. This transformative piece of technology works to make our lives a bit easier. It's PillPack. It's a full-service online pharmacy that'll make you wonder why you ever settled for a traditional pharmacy. PillPack delivers your medications and vitamins in pre-sorted, easy-to-tear packets with labels containing the date and time for each dose, so you can get rid of that, just kind of that antiquated Monday-to-Sunday pill box. They use advanced technology to create personalized packets for each customer, and they're always checked by a pharmacist prior to being shipped. Pill packs go through an image recognition system. They're built to ensure the right pill is in the right pack. Their system can actually detect dispensing accuracy by size, shape, color, density of the pill, and catalogs an image of every single packet that is dispensed. You can even order things like inhalers, creams, diabetes supplies, and they come in refrigerated, easy-to-open packages. Now, switching is part of this equation. It's actually very easy. You sign up on the secure site. They'll take care of everything for you. PillPack's pharmacists are available 24/7, so you can speak with them from the privacy of your own home or if you're on the go. They proactively contact your doctor. Yeah, that helps them to manage your refills for you so you never run out. It's compatible with most major insurance plans, including most forms of Medicare Part D. There's no extra cost beyond your standard copays. Shipping, of course, is always free. And if you happen to refer someone to PillPack and they sign up, PillPack will donate $100 to RxArt. That's a nonprofit organization whose mission is helping children heal through the extraordinary power of visual art. Very cool stuff. PillPack has a medication reminder app as well for the iPhone and the Apple Watch. So many, many reasons to check out PillPack. Why continue to endure your existing pharmacy? Seriously, PillPack will not only bring your pharmacy into the digital age, but they will make your life much, much easier. Here's what you should do to check it out. Visit pillpack.com/twit. You can sign up now. Their site is awesome. It only takes about 5 minutes to sign up. And when you use our link, you transfer your prescriptions to PillPack, you're going to get a credit for $20 worth of vitamins and OTCs. That's pillpack.com/TWIT. And we thank PillPack for their support of Tech News Today.
I think we have a fan of the day.
I think we do.
We do.
TNT's fan of the day is Christopher Mavity at ChrisMavNW on Twitter, who sent us this picture of a Patrick Beja hovering over his shoulder. I'm not sure whether I should be frightened or not by the lurking Beja in the background. I also wonder how he watches the TV if it's behind him, but maybe there's a mirror that he's staring into.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or maybe he just listens, but prefers to listen to the audio, the video version.
It's an elaborate setup where he goes to the video version, finds a screenshot, pauses it, puts it up onto the screen, and then listens to the audio podcast.
Yeah. To be fair, it would be difficult to take a selfie of yourself and the screen watching.
Okay, fine. He probably turns around to look at it. You're right. All right, you win.
We appreciate all of the fans of the day. Put them on any social media. We'll find it. We follow all of you on social media.
Yep.
Actually, we don't follow all of you yet. So you have to use a hashtag, #HowIWatchTNT. That's the way we'll find it.
That's right.
Someday I hope to follow all of you on social media. But now, okay, so Kevin Roos, we've had him on the show before.
Yes.
He does these great exposés on hackers or revenge porn.
Mm-hmm.
Purveyors.
He goes into topics that most would probably shy away from because they're challenging,
right.
And you just don't know what you're getting yourself into when you tackle it.
Exactly. So he had a story today about a problem with virtual reality, which I think is just really a problem with real reality, which is often the story you hear, like that it's a technology story that's really just a human story that it just happened to have happened in Uber or in virtual reality. But it sounds... he says people in Altspace VR, which is a place where you can hang out. Was that the place, the app that you use? But something similar.
V-Time was the one that I checked
out. So Altspace VR, a lot of users have complained that that they're being harassed, sexual harassment. And they suggest that maybe there needs to be a toggle function to increase personal space. It's fascinating because, as we know, yes, sexual harassment happens in real life all the time. It happens online. I guess the comparison here is, VR, we think of it as the online world, but it's different. I mean, it really is different. And so people, mostly women, have expressed the idea that it's really more invasive when someone is in VR, more even than the problems that happen in Second Life that were similar, or in any multiplayer video game, because it feels real. It feels horrible. So this is one of those stories that is just hard, because I think, like, well, I haven't had that experience myself, so I can't really speak to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, I think, well, do I need to be in Altspace VR if it's a place that I'm uncomfortable with? Would I just leave? Yes, but then you can't say that, because then it's like, well, everyone deserves to be there, just like Twitter. If you're being harassed on Twitter, do you need Twitter in your life? Maybe you don't. Maybe it's not worth it. But you don't want to tell everyone who's being harassed on Twitter, just get off Twitter, because... That
doesn't solve the problem.
No, it does not solve the problem.
And it keeps people who should be able to use it from wanting to use it or from choosing to use it. I mean, it's a wider problem that's going to have to... They're going to have to figure out a very solid solution, not just Altspace VR, because they say it's a growing issue here. But just VR in general, because it, you know, as we kind of continue down this path, these kinds of things, you know, spaces like this, virtual spaces that many people exist in the same area, and you know, and kind of explore the universe together, that sort of stuff, it's going to become more and more of a regular thing. Many people think that social networks are going to kind of go in the way of virtual reality, and that, you know, 10 years from now, a social network would actually be a virtual reality network as opposed to text on a screen. So obviously there needs to be some sort of attention to this. Maybe having the personal space button is one thing, but, you know, Kevin pointed out, and it's a really good point, that that's a reactive measure. The kind of harassment has already happened at
yes.
that point.
Yeah.
It's, okay, I didn't like that. Now I'm not going to get it anymore. But you still kind of got it. But yeah, I think the personal space thing and just virtual reality in general is so immersive. It's such a more personal kind of connection. Like my time with VTime was more limited than this.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't walking around. We didn't have choice of movement or anything like that. But I was still sitting in a room with two or three other people, and we're just kind of sitting there talking, and because it felt more real, you get a little bit of that anxiety mm-hmm. that maybe you don't get when you, say, hop into a text chat room. There's a little bit of that, you know, kind of anxiety of, oh, well, I'm revealing something about myself, and you kind of feel a little, there's more vulnerability
mm-hmm.
in that environment.
Right.
So I could completely understand how, you know, someone coming up to you inside a virtual environment, even though it's not real, you're still hearing their words, and you're still getting this perceived sense of intrusion on your space.
Yes.
You know, not to mention a whole host of other, you know, strange things that could happen to
right.
make you feel even more uncomfortable. So this is a big issue.
Yeah,
and it's a challenge.
Real. Yeah, I don't doubt for a second that these people's feelings are real, that they had these feelings and they experienced them, and I'm not saying that they aren't real. But I think this is also an anonymity issue, right? Like, I think a lot of people might be acting like that because there's no repercussions. There's no,
right.
No one knows who they are. So it's like, it's the difference between Twitter and Facebook. Like, people aren't constantly harassing each other on Facebook because there's a real names policy and you have to be.
People,
you know,
still do, though. But yes.
But not to the extent.
Right.
Or even not to the extent of like someplace like it's even more anonymous. Like, the more anonymous, we've talked about this a bunch of times, the more anonymous you are, the more you might be suspect, you know, to harassment. So I think that's what the issue is, too. It's not a virtual reality issue. Like, I think the feelings are different because of virtual reality. But I think that it's more like, what about anonymous spaces online? Like, what, you know, are those, are we just going to say, well, you're going to be harassed if you go there?
No.
Like, too bad. Like, I don't
no,
want to say
that.
The fact is, some people in the world are jerks. Most people are not. Some of those people might be in VR. Some of them might not. But,
yeah.
You know, I think it's an interesting thing to consider.
Sure.
I think there was also a Polygon article that was a developer was talking about this and saying, like, it is the developer's job to fix this. And I don't necessarily think that's true, because I think that is, like, you know, some people are jerks. Developers
yeah.
can't help people from being
right.
jerks.
Right. But giving tools, even in a reactionary measure, I think is a great start, at least. Mm-hmm. It doesn't prevent it entirely, and that's really difficult to do for me to prevent you from saying the thing that's very easy for you to just say and be done,
yeah.
you know, like
yeah.
that's almost impossible for me to prevent that.
Right.
And in a network sense, I don't know how they would tackle that,
yeah.
but at least give me tools after the fact so that I can, you know, block a user
right.
or whatever the case may be.
Exactly.
There we go.
All right. Well, there's another problem we haven't solved, but we have talked about.
Yes. Excellent. Cool.
So
conversation's good.
We're live at NAB. I wanted to thank New Tech for providing the TriCaster that we're using
yes.
today, and LiveView for access to this awesome booth. There's some amazing people. They've been so helpful and just great to get to know. And here they are. If you're watching the video version, this is the LiveView crew. Couldn't meet a bunch of nicer folks.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, guys. So
thank
we
you,
just
everyone.
Loved being here. And Panasonic also, awesome pan tilt cameras that we've been using all throughout the day.
That was responsible for the panning and the tilting
that
you just
yes.
saw. Dun, dun,
dun. So, yeah, thanks so much.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Yeah.
TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific. We have another show here tomorrow at the stage, and we have coverage actually all day tomorrow, so don't go anywhere. We're going to be giving you guys a lot to watch tomorrow from this stage. 4 p.m. Pacific, though, for TNT, 7 p.m. Eastern, 12 a.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be a part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail like we got today. I love the voicemails, 260-TNT-SHOW. And you can find us on Twitter. We are at TechNewsTodayTV.
Subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. Get all the ways at twit.tv/TNT. And I am Megan Maroney on Twitter.
And I'm at Jason Howell on the Twitter. Thanks to everyone here at the booth for helping us. We couldn't do it without you all. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see you all tomorrow.
Bye.